हरि हो
Lesson 31, one should practice equilibrium of mind so that one should not be disturbed by worldly gain or loss. Right, so now we've come to the point of regulating the habits, right, trying to create means one has taken the instruction of the spiritual master and then one is somehow or another applying it, right? Then having established that, the one is fixed in trying to apply, then one regulates. So then that regulation, then it's a matter of gaining equilibrium of mind, right? Because the difficulty comes is that one will practice, one will try to regulate, but then there's always going to be the disturbance. The mind is always going to give some problem, you know, whether you should do it like this or like that, or you could, how strict to be or how liberal to be, right? You know, so you're once trying to find that balance. Right, and even though one is regulated, right, because before that one is taking the instruction, one is following, and so you know it's more of just the idea, the concept, right? But then when you start the regulated application, then one will say, "I'm now practicing this religion." Right? Now, from Dharma comes Artha. Right? Now, what happens if sometimes the artha is there and sometimes it's not? Right? So one has to be equal poised, because otherwise one will think this religion is not working. Right? But this religion isn't for getting you material facility. It's for taking you back to Godhead. Right? And perfection in the material world, there isn't such a thing. You know what I'm saying? We have this idea, we have a false idea that there is perfection in the material world. Right? The only perfection is connecting it to Krishna. Other than that, there's no perfection. Does that make sense? So we're laboring under this problem because of these illusions, Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. So, because the soul by nature is, you know, Sat Chit Ananda. So Sat means eternal, so that means the material world is, you know, was also going to be lasting in its particular situation. Right? So that's Vaikuntha Brahma, that the material world will, you know, not be temporary. And Ananda Brahma is because of the element of Ananda being happy, therefore I can be happy in this. Right? Does that make sense? So these two Brahmas, that's your Sambandhi and your Prayojana. So naturally, what's the endeavor? Material. You understand? Now, if we understand the material world is temporary, there is no pleasure here. Right? But the soul is eternal, so on the platform of Krishna consciousness. And that's where one will find happiness. So the Sambandha and the Prayojana are set in this way. What's the Abhideya? Yes, yes, spiritual endeavor, devotional service. You understand? So much of the time in these equations, you only have to cover those two, Sambandha and Prayojana. If they're covered, then Abhideya automatically follows whatever is that Sambandha and Prayojana. Right? So here, so that equilibrium, so that one does not become disturbed by the situation. Right? Because one is feeling, I'm doing this, I should get a nice benefit. But the point is that nice benefit doesn't really exist. And we're going to burn the tree there. Yeah. Does this make sense? So that's why it'll naturally be the next stage. Right? So, not only is one's regulated oneself, so one will consider that an element of being equipoised, right? Because before it was just a concept and you'd kind of do it, and when you weren't feeling like it, not, but now you come to the point of bhajana kriya, right? Because shraddha is there, you appreciate it, then sadhusanga, you somehow or another associate, somehow or another practice. That's why it's somehow, because it's not specifically regulated. Then bhajana kriya, then you're following. Then you have to get being not be disturbed by worldly gain or loss, so anartha nivritti. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the humble sage by 518, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow and elephant, a dog and a dog eater. Right? So that equal vision means here the similarity. Okay. The bodies are material productions of different modes of nature, but the soul and the super soul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. It's not that he takes the bodies that they all get the same facility. That you'd have to say is foolishness. Right? That's the fun part, is modern man, though he prides himself in being so educated and so developed and sophisticated, he doesn't actually have the intelligence to see the difference in the situations. Right? Because the equality is not in the situations, but is in the nature of the soul. Right? Super soul is everywhere, soul is everywhere. But the point is the ant is an ant. Right? The dog's a dog. The man's a man. The bodies are like that, they're controlled by those modes. So if you want to interact with those forms, you have to interact according to the modes of nature that govern those forms. Right? So since human life is meant to be established in goodness, therefore these other forms that are established in passion and ignorance then aren't so important. Right? Right? So they don't have an equal status. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say we have a rock and a lump of dirt. Right? There's a difference in them, in their quality, what you can do with them. You might build your foundation with the rock, but you wouldn't use the dirt. Does that make sense? If you want to put mud on your floor, you'd use the dirt, not the rocks. You understand? So that means that we apply our intelligence to know what it is, but the equality is this, just because it's a rock or a dirt doesn't make one superior to the other. It's the situation only. One situation, one superior, another situation, the other superior.
Maharaj,
yes.
So we could say that dealing with the specific mode which each element is situated in is illumination rather than acting according to what I think how it should be dealt with.
Yes, yes. That's a good point. So here then you have the element is that, okay, if we're seeing them, even we see them, okay, the soul's same, Paramatma is same, so that transcendental quality, but the bodies are different, controlled by the modes. Now you can either, like this, follow in the way of regulation, according to Shastra, or we can make up our own idea. All right? So then that again drops it back into ignorance if we make up our own idea. So to be consistent, then we're trying to establish the mind in equilibrium, so in the mode of goodness. So that means also we have to establish establish our basis of that endeavor on the Shastra. Otherwise, then it drops to ignorance. So then in the footnote 49, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.12.10, here is another important warning that a man must save himself from attraction to women. Till one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory concept of the material body, the duality of man and woman must undoubtedly continue. But when one is actually self-realized, this distinction ceases. Right? When we say masculine and feminine, what's the point that's being made here? Right? It's not the form itself. It's the element that one can see the forms as opportunities for sense enjoyment. Right? So when one is self-realized, the distinction ceases, because the distinction of one can enjoy in this situation goes away, because you're saying, here's a soul, you know, servant of the Lord, and we're soul servant of the Lord, so how to serve the Lord? Does that make sense? We have to be clear on what distinction. Because otherwise, then it doesn't matter who does what and anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Because if we're saying, oh, man and woman, there's no difference, then why man and dog? Right? Need a new temple president, everybody else there, they've got political history. But this dog, he's new. He doesn't have any, you know, particular, you know, biases or anything. And he's very, you know, amenable, right? Just feed him something and he likes you, right? You know, it's no big deal, right? You know, don't make him upset, he bites, you know. But, you know, other than that, then, hey, it's cool. You understand? We'll say that's stupid, so it's just as stupid the other one. Does that make sense? We always have to remember that when you're dealing with a particular principle, that stupidity is, you know, all-encompassing. It's not that it only applies here and not there. Okay. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana. Right? A cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Right? 5.18. So this is the connection. Understand? Because this, in other words, what he's worked in are the purports in the Bhagavatam that are commenting on this Gita verse. So that's the connection being made. On the spiritual platform, the learned person not only gives up the duality of man and woman, but also gives up the duality of man and animal. Right? So that's the thing, is that we're fighting for within humans' rights, but what about everybody else's rights? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is if you're going to take it one, I mean, it's a principle. You know? This is the test of self-realization. One must realize perfectly that the living being is spirit soul, but is tasting various kinds of material bodies. That's the point. He's spirit soul, but he's tasting those. So according to that, you deal with him like that. Because that's what Shastra says, not because I feel like it. Right? Because the difficulty comes is that we're whimsically dealing, because in ignorance we feel that we are the body. So then even if we discuss it in this way, we will still whimsically look at it and say that therefore everybody can do whatever they like. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pundit, one who knows. Until that time, the duality continues, and the conception of man and woman also continues. So therefore, the Shastra's regulating on both levels. It's giving you the philosophy, right, the Vedanta philosophy, of how the living entity is the soul, not the body. Right, and how super soul is there with them. At the same time, the Shastra gives how to regulate that conditioned nature. Right? In such a way that working with both of them, there's a compatibility. Otherwise, we generally see if we make up our own system, it's good for one or the other. Right? Always, you know, we're not this body, Prabhu and everything. We completely dismiss the conditioned nature. We don't deal with it according to how we should. Right? Or we say it's all the same and everything like that, it doesn't matter. Then we're seemingly spiritual, but we're still leaving out how to proper deal and everything like that. You know, so the whimsicalness remains. Right? This is my son. So this is the, so duality remains. As long as duality is there, you follow Shastra. And when by following Shastra duality is not there, then we'll follow Shastra. So the point is following this the direction of the scriptures. Right? Which as what while this whole section is on, is that we can only go back to Godhead by hearing from the Lord or the devotee. The Lord sends the devotee, he himself gives the scripture, right? Because what God speaks, that's going to be documented in scripture. What the devotees speak about God, that will be documented in scripture. Right? So now one should approach that through the spiritual master. Otherwise, one may whimsically pick and choose whatever one likes. Well, like Madhvacharya, what he says over here, and you know Ramanuja here, and then you know the Gaudiyas over here, and that because they're a little too strict on these things, you know, like that. But then you know Shankaracharya says some cool things over here, and you know, and also Sai Baba did see something really nice here, you know, like this. This is what we're going to do. So no, you have to approach through the spiritual master. There's no whimsicalness. Right? Then, trying to apply that, then you come to the stage of actually following the rules according to scriptures. Right? And now, we come to following the rules, you should come to the point of being practice of equilibrium of mind. So, it's a natural flow in here. So we always have to remember the point being made, the adhikaranas here, the flow of them, is based on following Shastra. And that's there's not another method. If we think there's another method, that's speculative. So that's the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? Right. Contemplation of the Shastra according to Guru, the spiritual master, that's called vichar. Right? You're contemplating it, looking at it from different angles, so you get a complete vision, so that you can have a more complete understanding of how to apply it. Right? Now, if you're contemplating this, but it's not connected to the Lord, even though it's based on Shastra, it's called mental speculation. Right? Because even though it may be Shastric, and there may be some nice development, you become very austere, very knowledgeable, right, very skilled in the practices, still is considered mental speculation because it doesn't give you the Lord. It's only the taste of intellectualizing on things, you know, and that you consider your profit. Right? The karmi only analyzes something as much as it is needed to perform the activity to get the result. The result is his profit. Right? Right? You know, the endeavor, the getting it, but that's his profit. Not the intellectual aspect. That's just something that you do. Just like you want to open a box. You don't want to eat some cereal. You have to open the box. It's not that you get off on opening boxes. Right? Does that make sense? But let's say it's a birthday party or Christmas, right? People like opening packages. The opening has a whole taste. Does that make sense? So here then the jnani, his taste is in analyzing. Because he's not going to get any material benefit, so nothing to gain there. So it's still called mental speculation, though it's based on Shastra. So let alone, now one may say, but it's not based on Shastra, but it's about Krishna. But can it really be about Krishna if it's not based on Shastra? Because you can only go back to Godhead, which means you know Krishna, by following the scripture, Krishna's instruction. That means the Shastra. Right? Does that make sense? So underlying in this inherently is just as the form is necessary, but more important is that equanimity of mind, which means you're seeing the spiritual platform. So in the same way as the Shastra, the forms that it gives for dealing with duality are necessary. Because even if you're not conditioned, the other person is not conditioned, still the forms act according to the modes of nature. They're the ones that actually do the work. But now the work is not being done under the modes, but with the modes. Does that make sense? So you still will have to deal with that form according to Shastra. Right? But you're no longer in duality. But the modes are the modes. right? And then, but if, yeah, that makes sense. So that bridge between that platform and if we're conditioned, right? But the point is, the common element is the principle, because the principle is that higher point, that equanimity of mind, right? In the particular detail of application, that's what you're dealing with, the duality. You understand? So we're talking here about the same point, is that you're working on the principle, the soul is there, and that's the actual point. And so then the detail is what form the soul happens to be in at present. What modes are they working under? Right? If they're working in transcendence, no problem. Right? But if they're working under goodness, okay, it works well. Passion, a little more problem. But still, you can work with Shastra. You can work with authority. Someone in the mode of passion does accept authority. Right? The principle. Even if the principle is, they're the authority. But in any case, authority is accepted. Person in ignorance, they have the problem with authority. Because then it's like, oh, maybe it's there, but their own mind. Ultimately, it's like, okay, this is there and I respect and all that. That's a social thing because I'm a nice person. I'm respectful. I deal with people nicely. But that's the only reason that the principle of authority is accepted, because I'm a nice person. And so respecting authority is a nice thing. I'm nice, therefore I respect authority. Do you understand? But if I decide that I don't need to be nice in this situation, I don't respect authority. So ultimately it comes down to what I feel, that's my only security. The only one I can trust is myself. Right? And even the intelligence is a little too cold and calculating, so it's just my mind. Understand the danger here? So that's why these things are analyzed to this degree, because otherwise we can so easily fall into this trap and think that I'm doing something spiritual when I'm not. You know? Okay. So until the time the duality continues, and the conception of man and woman also continues, right? So in other words, it has to be dealt with according to those rules. Right? Just like Sukadeva Goswami, he doesn't worry about those rules. Right? So he's walking along, he's naked, and there's a whole bunch of ladies, you know, and it's not necessarily, I mean, you will have a few of the older ladies go out, maybe, you know, but generally the more unsophisticated, right? But generally it'll be the young girls who'll be walking along and walking and laughing and giggling and talking and stuff like that. And of course, you're not going to have the older men, unless the guy's also, you know, a little bit uncultured. You're going to have the young punk kids who are coming along and laughing and joking and making, right? So the point is, you know, generally it's according to the rule of the Shastra, you wouldn't stand naked in front of a whole bunch of ladies. Right? Unless, of course, you know, you're 3 years old, then it doesn't matter. Right? But he's 16. But the point is, the principle is that one doesn't take advantage of those situations. Why there's no rule for a 3-year-old? He's not going to take advantage of that assembly of women. Well, the 16-year-old most probably will. Right? But he sees the principle of the soul, so therefore he's not worried about it. But why doesn't he have to worry about it? Because he doesn't see any opportunity for sense gratification. So that's why it doesn't apply. So the rule is important for dealing with the form, right? But the principle is the most important. Does that make sense? Yes.
In Vyasadeva's case, then he was dressed, and they kind of...
Yes, because he sees the distinction. It says here, until that time the duality continues, so he's seeing the distinction. For Sukadeva, you can tell there's difference of bodies, but you make no distinction that one is any better than the other. Right? But Vyasadeva, because he's compiling the scriptures. Therefore, he's going to document, okay, you know, a man in this condition would deal like this with a woman, or a woman in this condition like that, and an older man like this, and a younger woman like that. And, you understand? So, because he'll be contemplating those things to document them, it is picked up by the girls. Right? As Prabhupada mentioned, the purport of that, girls have a sixth sense of being able to appreciate these things. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It says that Yeah. Yes.
So in this example of Shukadeva and Vyasadeva, can we say that Shukadeva has a transcendental vision?
He has a transcendental vision, but it's not that Vyasadeva is not, but he's applying that transcendental vision through the medium of Varnashram.
Yes.
But Sukadeva is acting outside of the Varnashram because he doesn't have any need, any connection to it. Vyasadeva doesn't have a need himself, but he's establishing an example. Right? So therefore, within that, distinction is made. But as we'll see is that, you know, the lady's interaction with Vyasadeva might be more open than something else. Just Vyasadeva's running bar, all the girls are doing is kind of covering themselves. But it's not that they're not talking with him or not being direct and open. Now, if a Kshatriya had come by, then it would be a different story. You know what I'm saying? Then you're dealing with the whole man-woman interaction. Here it's just, they're women and he's a man, but they're interacting on that Brahminical platform. I'm saying they're being open and honest and everything like that. Does that make sense? So within it, within the Varnashram system, they would be dealing with him as the most elevated and transcendental. Does that make sense? But still within the form. But it'll be just in its lightest application. Right? But as it goes down, if a king was going by, then it would be a whole different thing. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So then. Yeah. Sukadeva is acting in this way outside of it. But we see is then when they request him to preach, because up to this point he's not preaching, then he'll fall within the categories and then, okay, he sits on the Vyasadasan, they sit, they do all these different things. Because you just follow the forms. Because the forms are how the Krishna's energy works. Does that make sense? It means here it's the three modes of nature that controls the elements here. In the spiritual world is Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. They control how it works. So just as over there no one worries about that, here no one worries about it. The point is to be connected to Krishna. So you don't, it doesn't matter to you if Krishna consciousness is happening and the arrangements for the situation are done by the internal potency or the external potency. It doesn't matter as long as Krishna is served in the situation. Does that make sense? You know, that's what's beyond.
This equilibrium of mind can be developed by developing goodness and also by developing transcendence.
Means can this equilibrium of mind be developed by goodness or by the transcendence? It can be done by both, but it's not recommended, as we'll see, is that to use, means you can use both together. But to use goodness without transcendence means, unless you already are very pious, you wouldn't be able to use it.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Means, because look at it, in reality, when we're talking about these big, big Mayavadis, you know, I mean, traditionally speaking, big, big impersonalists, generally speaking, what is their material background? Right? What varna are they from? They're all Brahmins. Right? Occasionally you have some Kshatriyas. But you don't hear of others. Jabala is the only one you hear of that it's not understood what he was. But Gotama can understand his father was a Brahmin. Right?
Mayavadis must be very unsuccessful Kshatriyas.
Mayavadis may be un...
I mean, the absence of action. That's pretty...
The Prabhupada explains that's how the Mughals got into India. Because the Kshatriyas in Rajasthan and Punjab became Jains.
Yeah, yeah.
So because of that, then this so-called non-violence then ended up in some of the greatest violence in history. Yeah. Well, if they had just fought the battles, it would have been, you know, them with a few guys on horses. And India would have gone on very peacefully, right? So that's the problem with these non-Vedic philosophies, is they're very localized. Mm-hmm. They have a very specific situation. Mm-hmm. It has some benefit of regulation and upliftment, But in the broad sense, and in the ultimate sense, that it always falls short.
Because it's material. Because it's material.
Because it's material, yes. And material cannot gain you spiritual. So for us, then transcendence is the direct method, it's the quickest method, it's the surest method. So that's why Krishna is going through all this, is that it's yoga. Mm. Right? So not just that it's the practice of good qualities, but it's the practice of good qualities in connection with transcendence. So the emphasis is on the transcendence. And the practice, that's the detail of application with the forms that you're working with.
Sometimes talking to a devotee who is following the path of goodness, you realize that you can get trapped into that.
Yeah, you get trapped because they feel that just being good is perfection. That is devotional service. Just like you have the person that they're good and somebody is not good. Somebody broke some rule, so therefore he's bad. But why is that bad? You know, what does it matter? You know, if in the shadow, you know, play on the wall, then one puppet, you know, beats another puppet, you know, and then you go, oh, that's so wrong, you know, but what's actually happening? A bunch of shadows are, you know, so-called fighting, but do shadows actually fight? No, so therefore it's not real, but it'll be taken as real, you know, or it just dawned on me, like, it was yesterday. You have devotees who, you know, we're being liberal in using the term, but they find fault, right? They go around and target a certain weakness or a certain devotee and then find whatever wrong they can done, and then try to publicize it and use the, you know, the internet to advantage, right? And so in doing that, they feel they're doing devotional service because they're finding a wrong, and so they're correcting devotional, but it's not. It's just, the Acharya says, kutinata. It's the worst of all the anarthas.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it appears as service, but it's not. Just as the mode of goodness appears that it's service, but it's not. It's only when these things are connected to the Lord, it becomes service. The purpose person is not doing something that's has a problem in the pushing forward of Krishna consciousness, then that is a service. But to just say it's because you're breaking the rule, or it appears you're breaking the rule, that's not service. Because you think the rule is the devotion. You think the mode of goodness is the devotion. Right? Now, as we saw before in the previous verses, that in the Shastric aspects, Krishna's, you know, the point is being made, you have to follow the pious ones. Right? Because devotional service means engaging pious activities in Krishna's service. But that the only reason is not because piety is better. It's because Krishna, he himself, his activities are pious. You know, what we would call pious. So the interaction with the Lord, dealing with the Lord on whatever platform, as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, is best performed through piety. The activities you call piety. But unless they're connected to the Lord, they're not devotion, they're only pious. Right? If they're only pious, it'll get you a material benefit. If the piety is followed without attachment to the results, then you'll get liberated. Right? But if you follow it without attaching results to please Krishna, then you go back to Godhead. Right? And if you don't follow it, then, you know, Yamaraj has 26 nice, you know, how you say, resort locations for you. Yes.
But the devotees who find faults in others can think that they have the connection to the Lord.
It's saying they can think, but the point is how do you use kutinati in Lord's service? How is fault finding a service? You know what I'm saying? No problem to establish, right? You know, you have the GBC, you have the sannyasis, you have the temple president, he has his officers, right? The secretary, the treasurer, and the fault finder. Right? Everybody has one. You know, all big organizations, they have default line. You know, when something goes, you know, you don't know what to do, you call in the default line. Right? You understand? It's not a service. It's within what you're doing. The Krishna conscious endeavor, if there's some weakness that's going to create that there won't be lack of success in that activity, in Krishna consciousness, then it can be pointed out. But the point is also, there is the thing of don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Problem is someone in the mode of goodness can appreciate that, so someone in the mode of ignorance won't be able to. So they can't understand is, okay, maybe in this situation, the detail's here, but there's a bigger picture. Or they can't actually see the Krishna consciousness because they think the rule is the Krishna consciousness. You understand? That's why we have a complaint about smartas. We take it that the problem with smartas is they follow rules. Not at all. We have great respect for a smarta because he actually follows the rule. He is actually pious. He is actually a human being. Not only human being, they're Brahmins. The problem with the smarta is he's not connecting his rules and regulations to Krishna. That's the fault. That's all. That's the only fault. But we'll take it, oh, because they follow the rules. Ah, you're such a smarta. No, it says, no. Smarta is the standard platform of Brahminical life as far as rules go. But they're called a smarta because of their consciousness, not because they follow rules. Okay? Because what's the other? The liberal. They don't follow any rules, except for what they make up. You know? You know what I'm saying? So they're in the worst position. So not only, you know, and so then if you say, well, they're God conscious, but don't follow any rules, how are they going to express that love for God? You know, it's like a, how you say, you know, the boy, you know, he's liberal. He doesn't follow any rules, but he really likes this girl and stuff. But he's not, you know, about to follow all those rules, you know, roses and, you know, poems or candies or, you know, taking her out to dinner and all that. But, you know, it should be just whatever he feels as expression of the heart. And, you know, he was down today, you know, in the auto shop and all that. And he saw this really fabulous camshaft. I mean, it was so shiny and so well made. You know, it was the German thing, you know, like this, like that. So he thought, I'll give this to him. You know, it's an expression of my affection. Like that. And then, you know, then you wonder why it didn't work. And then the girl's not broad-minded. And there's something, well, I wouldn't want to be with her anyway. She didn't appreciate my, you know, like this. So it's, you understand? So the point is even though it's well-meant, the rules are what make the form, what makes the expression work. But unless you know what the expression is, the form doesn't really have any meaning. But still, the devotee is following the rules, though he doesn't have much realization, because he knows it's for Krishna, though he doesn't understand how it's connected. Is better situated than the one who won't follow rules and think he's connected. So of the liberal and the conservative is rightly situated, though the consciousness still needs improvement. But for the liberal, both sides he's missing. You know, because even if you say, okay, underlying is the Krishna conscious point, great. But how do you express it? You can't. You know what I'm saying? So of the two, the consciousness you change, the form doesn't have to change. The other one, you change the consciousness, then they're going to figure out that they have to change the whole form. So more work is there. Of course, of the two to change, the consciousness is more difficult. That's why you don't see a lot of smartas joining, and a lot of liberals do. You know what I'm saying? But the problem with the smarta is not that he follows rules. Yes?
The liberal is generally a seeker, you could say.
So you could say they're a seeker. Yeah, you could say.
So you would be more inclined to actually want to join.
Yeah, but the problem is their weakness would be an endeavor. Because they don't know what they want, they don't know who they are, and therefore they don't know what to do. So even though they consider themselves educated, they're actually very ignorant. While the person who follows the regulations, he knows his position, he knows the endeavor, he knows the result, but he thinks it's simply because he's made the endeavor and gotten that result. That's the perfection. It's still not. It's still the consciousness. So you have to combine the two. You know? So in this way you could say that because consciousness is more important, therefore it's a greater weakness being the smarter than the liberal. Right? Because even if they become devotional, they'll still have that thing that the form is the... But the other one has the problem because they can't accept form. As we gave examples, that 40 years into the movement and, you know, officially no one knows what Varnashram is. Why is that? Because you're dealing with a class of persons who their social background is no form. So form is there. It's easy to understand. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, and one may say, oh, it's so intellectual. The point is what is the strong, it means between men and women, just on the point, is you have spirituality and religiosity. Which quality is attributed to who?
Spirituality
to the men, religiosity to the women. Okay? Now, religiosity means the rules, the forms. Right? Does that make sense? And we see, according to Shastra, when we're talking about the spiritual transcendental platform, then the conditioning of the women, because it's on predominantly on the platform of the mind, it will be the weaker of the two. Right? Does that make sense? So now, you understand the drift where we're going? Is that if the women are less intelligent on that platform, but they can understand Varnashram. So what's the position of those who can't understand Varnashram? They have to be lower. So the women means they're humans. So that means you have to be lower than human to not be able to understand. Means socially. So that is not a glory. It's not a glorious position that we don't understand Varnashram, and in fact that publicly you can't even use the terms. You can't say Brahman or Shuvaisha. That means, and now it's not only that, you're making rules against the Shastra. So it's totally in the mode of ignorance. You understand? So the point here is equilibrium means you can deal with all this. You don't have a problem with dealing with the differences because you know ultimately become the platform of the soul. There are no differences. So therefore, it's only a matter of what is useful for serving the Lord in the situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, you see there's that little clip, you know, of the Los Angeles Kirtan. I'm not sure, I think maybe Prabhupada was there and everything, and in Los Angeles, all the devotees are there all dancing and everything's going crazy and all that. But the camera goes over for a moment and shows who's leading the Kirtan. There's a lady sitting on the floor of the harmonium. I think that's Lilavati. Right? Why is she leading the Kirtan? Because she's a woman?
She's good.
She's good. That's all. So it's not a matter of, no, women can also lead kirtan. No, it's a matter of who's good can lead kirtan. You're not good, don't lead kirtan. Right? Does that make sense? It's not a matter of, oh, we're transcendental. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we would all agree he was transcendental, right? We're not going to have any doubts there, right? Unless you're one of these, how you say it? That Diksha Pranali lines or something, and if so, excuse me, but I couldn't care less. But his voice was not good. Generally speaking, he didn't lead kirtan. He would always get his devotees who were good at leading kirtan to lead. Yes.
So when we saw the kirtan mela, it was also the kind of the usual suspect shoes that you see the names of who was.
Yeah, because it's who's good at lead. Point is if you're trying to bring together the devotees to chant nicely, you want someone who has proven that they can do it. A daily kirtan, it doesn't matter. They can lead and this and that, and then, you know. But here you specifically want the devotees to be able to come together and get a particular result. So you count on those who have proven themselves in that capacity. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What about verses 335 and 1847 in Gita, which specify that even maybe you don't do something very well, and you do something else better. If it's not your duty, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, that's there.
The point being, just because you're good at something may not be something you should do.
No. But here, this. No, yeah, of course. But here, the point was, is we're dealing on. on the element of that liberal aspect. You know, we're dealing with liberality here, that the point of their saying is no, because, you know, she's a woman, therefore it's no, it's not because she's a woman, she was good, that's all. So it has nothing to do with women's rights. That's what we're addressing here. We're just addressing the element that the liberals' concept of what's good and right is totally based on the mode of ignorance, on their own speculation. You know, while we're saying is the smarta, though we never have much good to say about them, but as far as situation, they are situated rightly because they are following the shastra. They're following a regulated life. But they miss the whole point because they're not Krishna conscious. So ultimately the point is it's Krishna conscious and it's based on shastra. You have to combine the two. So it's not one or the other, because we always like to polarize things and make it it's this or that.
There's one purport in the seventh canto of Shivala says that one cannot become Krishna conscious without following the rules and regulations of the Shastra, but simply by following the rules and regulations of the Shastra, one cannot become Krishna conscious.
Yes, 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 very good.
It's necessary, but not sufficient.
Yes, it's necessary, but not sufficient. So that's the difficulty, is that liberal doesn't see the necessity. It's necessary, but as I said, they'll point out the weakness that it's not enough. And like as Versi said, that's exactly the point. But it doesn't mean that for that then you throw the whole thing out. You know, it's a standard thing. You find a fault in something, you throw the whole thing out.
Are these martyrs tightly bound by the mode of goodness?
Are they
bound by the mode
of goodness? Yeah, it means they're controlled by goodness. That's how they're still materially bound, but through goodness. You know, so Prabhupada says it's like you have a gold chain. You're still tied up. You're put in prison and connected to the wall, you know, like that, you know, like that. But it's gold chains, you know. You know, it's still your. Yeah. In this, okay. Until that time, the duality. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pundit, one who knows. Until that time, the duality continues, and the conception of man and woman also continues. In this stage, one should be extremely careful about mixing with women. No one should think himself perfect and forget the Shastric injunction that one should be very careful about associating even with his daughter, mother, or sister, not to speak of other women. No one should think himself perfect and forget, because even if he is transcendental, still the form is what the expression is made through. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So still it's fault. Like Lord Chaitanya means we would also have to admit he's transcendental. Right? But he would follow the rules. Because otherwise, where's the expression? If anybody can do anything at any time, anywhere, where is the culture?
Mm.
You know, you could eat at midnight, you know, toast and things like that. Then what's the meaning of breakfast? You know what I'm saying? So all these different things is that, you know, it's like it's breakfast time, you lay out the table, the candle's there, everything's there, and it's kind of like looking at, is this dinner? I thought this was breakfast. You know, what, no, it's breakfast, but what about the candles? It's light outside, so I light candles. It's a matter of, that's how culture is established, is that Krishna likes certain things in certain ways in certain situations. Because the point is if you're dealing with that entity, who it means, let's say you're dealing here with the mother. Okay, but the point is the body the mother? Right? No, it's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Right? So the point is the motherness is Krishna's potency. So because we want to deal ultimately with Krishna in the form of mother, then in this form that's manifest. It can be manifest through that form. Right? Being through that form, then we can interact. But the motherness we're interacting with is actually Krishna. Right? So therefore, since it's Krishna, how are we supposed to deal with this form of, this manifestation of motherness?
According to Shastra.
According to Shastra, because that's how Krishna wants it to be done. It means if it's spontaneous, you would do what Krishna would want anyway. Right? The spontaneous devotional platform means it's naturally following the rules, but the emphasis isn't on the rules, right? But dividing means you're following the rule because you don't have that spontaneous affection. So therefore, to know what you do, you follow what the scripture says. Because it's you're dealing with Krishna anyway. The problem is we leave Krishna out and think, no, I'm just dealing with my mother. So therefore, however I feel like dealing with my... You deal with your mother in your way, I deal with my mother in my... We have our own relationship. Why are you trying to impress yours? No, in detail, yes, the manifestation. But the point is the principle is still Krishna. So that means within the detail, it still has to be in line with the principle that the Shastra gives. Yes?
Maharaj, I cannot understand why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, so exalted devotee, didn't sing kirtan.
Why he didn't?
I cannot...
Why can't you understand?
Because for less advanced devotees, it's more important to hear from the Paramahamsa.
Okay, so hearing from the Paramahamsa. So that means every light bulb should be directly connected to the generator. And if it's connected through the electric line that may go for kilometers, it won't actually get the full benefit of being lit up, right? That's what you're saying. So, if... So, what's the point? Is that what makes the pure devotee special? Right, because you're going to be singing with your voice box, which is made out of material nature that's controlled by the modes. So what makes it special? Why is the pure devotee voice box better than the non-pure devotee voice box?
Huh?
You don't know. This point. The consciousness, but that means the chit potency is there. So the singing, if it's under the chit potency, it works. Just remember, how did he become a devotee? Who actually convinced you, you know, at first to get you to start the process or even think about the process? Right? Prashadam, I think. Like that. But Srila Prabhupada himself personally came to you and made you, right? Or was it a new bhakta?
Was the prashadam made by a pure devotee?
Yeah, it was the prashadam cooked by a pure devotee. Do you understand? So it's the potency that's there. If you have an electric cable, right? And there's a generator, and the current's going. Now, I'm 10 feet away from the generator, and I grab the electricity. Then it's not going to be hardly anything, right? Because there's no real meaning. But if I actually touch the place where it comes out of the generator, then I'm going to get a shock, right? Or is it going to be the same at either side? That's the point. The chit potency, if it's bona fide, it's authorized, it has the same potency. That's why the devotees go out on Hari Nam, it has effect. Right? Otherwise, if that's there, then we should all pack up, go to the forest, sit down, and when we become pure devotees, then go out and preach. See, because you're working on it simply that the word pure devotee has been used, so that's a better word, so therefore let's put that into the equation. But it has nothing to do with that. Because then it's only the pure devotee and everybody else is a schmutz. Do you understand? Does that make sense?
I heard one of your lectures where you said that many devotees like kirtans, but not so many go to seek some advanced devotees to hear him.
No, but what is that? Still, that doesn't change the principle. The devotees may more appreciate a good kirtan than a nice lecture. You know, it'll have more of a universal appeal. But it's still the same point, is that it's the potency, the chit potency that's there. Right? Because this is the age of kirtan. So that's why it's the predominant. We only discuss philosophy, so we're convinced to practice kirtan. You understand? Because otherwise we'll find something else to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to understand is that the pure devotee and anybody connected to the pure devotee, they're all special. right? We just take it for granted because there's so many devotees that, you know, then we're making a distinction within that, which is fine, but then we just take it as ordinary. It's not ordinary. You know, if we're sitting here seeing equal vision, a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elf, and a dog, and a dog eater, what about devotee? Then you mentioned here, this is all the material platform. Learned and gentle Brahmin, so the top of the material platform. So he sees all of them equally because they're all servants of the Lord. But he's going to deal with the Brahmin in one way, a cow a different way, an elephant a different way, a dog and a dog eater. Each will be dealt with differently. But as far as their position, he doesn't see any difference. Because they're all servants of the Lord. That means any of them can be engaged in the Lord's service. Yes.
We were discussing fault finders earlier, so how to deal with them?
Generally one avoids. That's the best. You know, unless you're in a position to point out something, but otherwise you avoid. Yeah. Because otherwise they'll find the fault and you're finding fault. Yeah. Okay. 519. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. Right? Because birth and death is based on your conditioning, on duality. They are faultless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Right? So when the mind is that, you're situated in the Brahman platform. You know, in other words, you'd have to be situated on the Brahman platform to be like that. So being situated like that is on the Brahman platform. Right? But still, that's not the point, is that then the next stage is getting to Krishna consciousness. Right? Equanimity of mind is the sign of self-realization. Equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is the sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, specifically birth and death. Right? Because if you're not disturbed by anything else, birth and death, which are the most disturbing, aren't going to bother you. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he has elevated the stage of equanimity through realization of self, he is liberated from conditional life. In other words, he is no longer subject to take birth in the material world, but can enter into the spiritual sky after his death. So if you identify with the body, it doesn't mean you don't use the body. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is not identifying with the body. So when it's just they're sitting around, he dresses very simply, right? But if they're going out in a preaching program, he may dress very nicely so that the persons who are coming will be impressed, because they're impressed by the modern, you know, how you say, development. So therefore, someone who has facility within that, they must be successful. So you want to hear from them. So if you're dressing how they would consider you're successful, then they would say, oh, he has something to say. Right? So therefore, if it's advantageous, then it's there. Otherwise, it's that you could, by dressing like that, it would be better for the preaching. If you don't, then we're attached to some form in the mode of goodness, then that's still duality. Though, better duality. You know? But it's still not the ideal. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes flawless and is eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Right? So the duality, like we mentioned before, is there's attraction. We're attracted to something material. Right? If there's a situation where that item of attraction is present, the tendency is then we want to figure out how to enjoy that item of attraction. Right? But if that's no longer there, then that means one is liberated. Right? Because one will take birth to be in those situations to interact with that particular item. But if there's no attraction for it, then there's no situation in the material world you need to be in. Therefore, you're qualified to be in the spiritual world, because you can only be in the spiritual platform if he's not attracted. Does that make sense? He also becomes flawless. Okay. Such per, such per, Such persons are considered already liberated, and their symptoms are described below. 520. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant. Right? So pleasant and unpleasant are still going to be there. You're in the material world. Right? But it's not that you are rejoicing or lamenting. You understand? We'll take it that, okay, everything's neutral. Therefore, the situation has to be neutral. No, we're neutral. So the prasadam's nice, the prasadam doesn't taste nice. We're neutral. Right? That's the point. Not that, oh, to be neutral, then the prasad should not taste nice. And if anybody comments, oh, prasad's nice, this is not equipoise. Right? Is that make sense? So that's what we're trying to distinguish here, is that otherwise you should, a person neither, because the two are mentioned, because there means there are situations that things will be nicer, there are going to be situations things are not going to be nicer. It's just the way it works. Who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the signs of God is already situated in transcendence. So self, okay. The symptoms of a self-realized person. Right? So he's mentioned he's established on this platform of equanimity. And so therefore he's free from birth and death. Now he's giving those qualities, right? So he's starting from the principle and working back down to the detail.
What is the meaning of self-intelligent?
So, I mean, we'll get to that. But here, self-intelligent, I would think, would be understanding the self. Because then you know who the self is, so that's self-intelligent. If you don't know who the self is, then you're not so intelligent. He is self-unintelligent. He is greatly self-unintelligent. What a self-unintelligent person. The symptoms of the self-realized person are given herein. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. Right? Because then, obtaining something nice or not nice, what is it nice? What is nice? If you get something nice in the material world, what is our consideration of nice? Why do we call it nice?
Nice to the body.
It's nice for the body or nice for the mind. In other words, it's nice for the material identity. Because otherwise we'll consider it nice. You know, it's just like we're considering, oh, it's starting to warm up now, you know, and this is nice, right? But the polar bears are going, oh no, it's that time of year again. Right? You know? Yes. That's another thing. We're not discussing that. You know what I'm saying? We're discussing the duality of the world. Means that you see it for Krishna, then of course. But the point is, are rejoicing, why are we rejoicing then? Then we could take it to that. You know, are we rejoicing because it is nice for Krishna, or because we arranged it and finally it happened, or because we're, you know what I'm saying? So as long as all that's in place, then that's what we're looking for. That's what we want. So one always has to remember in this that it's ultimately, that's the point, is it's connected to Krishna. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's something that's connected to Krishna, then, you know, we'll see how to improve that. But still, the position of lamentation, one always has to be careful of, because lamentation is coming from the mode of ignorance. Then you think, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so that. That means, actually, I think I'm the doer, but I'm not very good at being the doer, so therefore I'm lamenting. But if I'm not the doer, then if it worked out great, it wasn't me anyway. But if it didn't work out, it's still not me. Right? So equipoise. It means if it worked out good, we continue doing it like this. If it didn't work out good, then we should change it. Not that it didn't work out, and now I could go flog myself or something. This steadfastness of mind is called sthira buddhi. Okay, so this is self-intelligent. Stira Buddhi means fixed intelligence, self-intelligence. He is therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul, nor does he accept the body as permanent and disregard the existence of the soul. This knowledge elevates him to the situation of knowing the complete science of the absolute truth. So the complete science, right? So this is science, right? So this is self-intelligence. But the complete science is then knowing the relationship with God and acting within that. Right? So when this is being applied to the Bhagavan platform, that's complete. Right? So that's why we will, within transcendence, will point these things out. The complete, you know, or the supreme personality of God. You know, or the supreme personality of God. Right? So Krishna is the supreme of all personalities of Godhead. Krishna is the supreme personality. Or of all aspects of the supreme, the personality is the top. This knowledge elevates him to the situation of knowing the complete science of the absolute truth, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. He thus knows his constitutional position perfectly well, without falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. So it says, falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. Means there's a oneness, means we understand we're all Brahman, there's a oneness in purpose, but we don't think that we're one in quantity. Right? So therefore, there's a difference. And because of that difference, there's relationship and interaction. Does that make sense? So even Krishna, to interact with himself, expands. Right? Balaram and him are non-different, but still he expands as Balaram, then he and Balaram can interact. Does that make sense? So the point is that difference is important. This is called Brahman realization or self-realization. Steady consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So the realization is there, and when that's steady, that's Krishna consciousness. Because we're situated on this platform of Brahman in connection with Krishna, not otherwise.
So he establishing that through the attraction to Krishna, the retraction will be
there. Yes, then retraction will be there from the material. So that's the problem, is when we're attracted to the material, we're not attracted to Krishna. As we're attracted to Krishna, we're not attracted to the material world. So in other words, when we're attracted to the material, we've retracted ourselves from Krishna. So that's called Bahir Mukh, means the face is away. But as we turn our face to Krishna, then we're getting attracted to Krishna. That means we're turning away from the material, so we're retracting from there.
So in that pastime of Murari Gupta and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he actually passes urine on his plate, because he was now talking of yoga, and before he was doing devotion, so he's chastising him for doing that.
Yeah. Lord Chaitanya mentions, he, I say, to that Mayavada, he says, I pass urine on the plate of those who think that they are one with the Lord.
That'll teach
you. Yeah. I mean, when you're three, you can get away with a lot. Right? We don't see Lord Chaitanya doing this when he was bigger. When he was three, then who's going to say anything? Yes.
So about this self-intelligence, you said here that the steadiness of mind is called Stira Buddhi.
Stira Buddhi.
So it means there
is fixed intelligence.
Yes. So it is when the mind is steady, means it's equal.
Well, the mind can only be steady if it's based on intelligence. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when will a woman be, you know, stable and confident?
When
she's protected. So that's the whole point, is when the mind is connected with the intelligence, and under the protection of the intelligence, then it will be steady. So therefore, stira buddhi. That's why he put the emphasis on the buddhi, not on the mind.
Yes.
We want equilibrium of mind. That is a quality. But that comes because it's based on working under intelligence. Right? And then intelligence is then based on scripture. right? And we're discerning here in the scripture what is connected with the Lord and what's not. You know, so in this way then it comes down. Yeah. Like that. So now it's just, as we see, we started always at the top in descent. We started with the Lord, then his instructions, then the devotee, you know, the devotee's the spiritual master, the shastra, then it comes down to application, you know, and now we're seeing, you know, how that's working. And then, so it's come all the way down, and it's working because it's connected all the way back up, right? So we see here, you're not going to be, you know, what is it, stira prajna, stita prajna, stira guti, because without being it based on guru, sadhu, and shastra. Because otherwise, it's you've made it up, therefore, made it up today, but the mind, in its speculative nature, will think, maybe there's a better way to do this. This is so good. But then one will think, no, but there must be something better. Right? So unless you know that, no, this is the best it is. Right? Just like, let's say, we had that, I'm not sure where it was, what state. I think it was Punjab. There was a, no, maybe Rajasthan. There was a king back in, I'm not sure when, in the early 19th century, no, early 20th century. He died of boredom. Right? So this is one of those guys that have as much money as you can have. He has his clothes laundered in Paris. Right? So that and in those days you didn't just drop it off at, you know, DHL, you know, like that. That meant, you know, wherever he was, it had to be sent down to the port, put on a ship, and, you know, then it gets to London, is laundered, put on a ship back. So you're talking about quite a few months. You know, like that. So that means quite a few clothes. So he died of boredom. Now, how could he die of boredom if he didn't have knowledge? Right? But he didn't have enough knowledge. He understood that only through pious activity, only through being dharmic, can you get anywhere. You know? Only through that can you get anywhere. Right, so he's followed that, and he's gotten the maximum in there, and he knows that's the maximum you can get. Someone who's in ignorance will think, okay, there, but I'm reasoning that because there's something more. But he knows there's nothing more. So because you think there's something more, then you try something else, and that's why then they lose what they had was good. But here, he'll stick to that, but you get bored. So that's why Krishna consciousness is so important, because if you follow the scriptures perfectly, you'll get bored because you'll get everything that you're looking for and it still won't satisfy you. So unless you add Krishna consciousness. Right? Is that
not boring? It's not boring.
Not boring. Yeah, that's not boring. So then you won't have any problem. You won't die of boredom.
Krishna says, I am adventure.
I am adventure. So lesson 32. One should practice concentrating one's mind only on Sri Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, but also not disregard other empowered living beings known as demigods. Okay, now yeah, this is a very big section. Okay. 9. So in other words, we should be fixed only on Krishna, but it doesn't mean we disregard the demigods. Right? Then so how we have that balance? 9:22-23. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other demigods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti. But they do so in a wrong way. Right? So you're worshiping, but not in the correct way. The correct way is actually know what you're doing. Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of demigods. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or the directors. Right? So in other words, they're in a department and they're in control of those laws. But the point is those laws aren't their laws. The laws are, right? That's one major aspect of why there can't be a lot of means. One is that, of course, is there is order, so that means there must be intelligence. But the idea that there could be many gods also wouldn't work, because all these different gods would have all their own idea. Right? And so then there'd be chaos. So since there's not chaos, that means there has to be one person who's made the laws, and they're consistent. Right? Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as avidhi purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. Avidhi means not according to the rules. Right? He doesn't, so unnecessary worship. So unless it's part of his worship, then it's not considered important. Right? Means the rules have to be followed, but you understand they're Krishna's rules. So you follow him to please Krishna. You don't follow him to please the demigods so that you'll get the benefits that he offers by following the rules. You worship Krishna so that by following the rules and pleasing Krishna, then Krishna arranges through the officers that they get. As we said, through the modes, things are arranged, so that means the officers. Yes.
So are there specific reactions for worshipping demigods?
Specific reactions for worshipping means the tendency is you'll go to where that demigod is. Because your faith is there, so therefore you're going to be carried there. You know? Like that.
Destroys bhakti.
Yes, destroys bhakti.
Be considered already destroyed, right?
That means when you start, maybe not, but it's just a matter of time.
It's one of the beginning of the Sakya Sakya Pika Prabhupada talks about.
Yes, yes.
It destroys bhakti.
Yeah. 3:30:32. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow these teachings faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. Right, so these verses were quoted before. Right, same thing, but that was to establish that one must follow the direction of the Lord. Mm. Right? So now it's a matter of that the focus should be on Krishna alone. Right? And so that's what the Shastra is directing. One has to sacrifice everything for the Lord. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Right, so you're working for the Lord's benefit, but you're not claiming results, right? So, as Rupa Goswami is mentioning that in the pure devotion, that it's being done for Krishna, right? But at the same time, without karma and jnana, because it could be under Krishna's direction, but with a fruit of desire, you know. So one has to get without claiming proprietorship. Or you say proprietorship, then that would even cover the jnana. Right. Arjuna did not have to consider the order of the Lord. He had only to execute his order. The Supreme Lord is the soul of all souls. Therefore, one who depends... So he didn't have to decide whether it was good or not. He just had to apply it. So he'll use his intelligence how to apply it. So he used discrimination. Right? What weapon to use at what situation, you know, where to drive his chariot, who to fight first. He's using discrimination, but that's all under the order of the Lord. Is that something? The Supreme Lord is the soul of all souls. Therefore, one who depends solely and wholly on the Supreme Soul without personal consideration, or in other words, one who is fully Krishna conscious, is called Adhyatma Chetas. So fully Krishna conscious here. So that's the, like Prabhupada's pointing out these points, but so someone who's fully Krishna, you can only do this if you're fully Krishna conscious. Right, so therefore perform these activities trying to be fully Krishna conscious. 77, 934, and 1865. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. And thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. One should concentrate his mind on Krishna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi-forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. And this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. 10. Oh, okay. Yeah, so Krishna, bringing back, you focus on him, you obtain him. Right? Because already before he's described, he focused on these others. But he's also defined is that the faith that one has to even focus on a demigod is coming from Krishna himself. Right? So still the same principle is that they're worshipping him, but they don't know it. So the point is made is whatever you're dealing with within this world is all Krishna. We just don't understand that it's Krishna. Right? So if we're Krishna conscious, then everything becomes wonderful. If it's not Krishna conscious, then it remains mundane.
Maharaj says here, no one should not divert attention to other forms of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Even, like it says, Ram, Balan. Murari Gupta couldn't do that.
No, because he is, but he couldn't divert his attention to another form. So he's following this rule.
Oh, so he's focusing on Rama, not to other forms.
Yes, okay. Like that. So the point is what? But here is being brought out to focus on Krishna, Braja Krishna. So that's why then that's considered better. Because most of the time these other opportunities are given. But this time then that worship is given in this way. We know it's Krishna who's come in this form. So it's Krishna is pastime Nisringa or as Vamana or Varaha. That's why in the song, Keshava Drita Narahadu, Keshava Drita Meena Sharir, Keshava Drita, like that. So it's Keshava has come and performed these pastimes. So we don't think that it's something separate or get attracted to that as the focal point. Ten six. The seven great sages and before them the four other great sages. And the Manus, progenitors of mankind, come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings, populating the various planets descend from them. Krishna is the origin of all great personalities in the universe. The Lord is giving a genealogical synopsis of the universal population. Brahma is the original creature born out of the energy of the Supreme Lord, who is known as Hiranyagarbha. And from Brahma, all the seven great sages, and before them, four other great sages, namely Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar, and the 14 manas are manifested. All these 25 great sages are known as the patriarchs of the living entities all over the universe. There are innumerable universes and innumerable planets within each universe. And each planet is full of population of different varieties. All of them are born of these 25 patriarchs. So it all goes back to these Prajapatis. Right? Everybody's coming down from them. So point here is that if everybody's coming from them and they're coming from Krishna, so then there's no need of worrying about anybody else, because here we dealt with demigods and now we're dealing with forefathers. Right? Because there are other elements to worship. Right? We dealt with all the living entities. You know? 10:9. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. The devotees are focused on Krishna. Pure devotees, whose characteristics are mentioned here, engage themselves fully in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subjects. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they take pleasure in discussing him with other devotees. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged. That's just what he said. We don't mention that. With the soul.
The heart can be in Krishna, but not the soul.
Yeah. Means because the heart means is your affections and all that, but the point is those affections should come fully to the transcendental platform. That they're connected is good, but how much is there? Like the consideration of Kubja, her affections are directed at Krishna. But the point is it's not. The platform is not the most ideal. Because here when we're saying about the soul, then we're looking at that surrender without anything for ourselves. Right? So then that element is not as ideal. Right? So, or you could also look at it that they have the proper knowledge and understanding and they have the proper attitude. So that combination is very strong. That is the mind is equipoise, and you have the intelligence to know how to apply that in the situation. I lose a page. Oh, okay. So then they're always absorbed, and so naturally then they always discuss with others. 11:55. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. This is considered one of the main verses within the Gita. Okay, so free from contamination of fruit of activity, mental speculation, so karma and jnana, right? So pure devotional service, free from karma and jnana. So then it becomes pure unalloyed devotional service. He works for him, is doing the work. He's the goal. He's friendly to every living entity, means the sambandha. So sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana are all connected to him, right? And he's trying to please Krishna without any desire for any results. Krishna is the highest goal of life. The word mat parama refers to one who considers the association of Krishna in his supreme abode to be the highest perfection of life. Such a person does not wish to be elevated to the higher planets, such as the moon or sun. If you're going to do that, why don't you go back there? There's a pillar there. You can lean against it, get really good support, and just use a bigger lens. Do you understand? Because otherwise, as soon as you do that, you're not going to get your shot, because as soon as you do that, I put up the fourth wall. And when the fourth wall's there, you don't get your shot. You understand? So, like that. So if you want to, if it's just one shot like that, that's okay. But if you're going to be like that, then sit back there. That's why God gave, you know, telescopic lenses. So that the person getting photographed doesn't have to be disturbed.
On the eighth day,
he gave the paparazzo the telescopic lens. But it wasn't so good. And he said, go forth and take pictures.
Venture into the world.
Venture. Yes. Okay. Such a person does not wish to be elevated to the higher planets, such as the moon or sun or heavenly planets, or even the highest planet of this universe, Brahmaloka. He has no attraction for that. He is only attracted to being transferred to the spiritual sky. And even in the spiritual sky, he is not satisfied with merging into the glowing Brahma Jyoti effulgence. If he wants to enter the highest spiritual planet, namely Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, he has full knowledge of that planet and therefore is not interested in any other. As indicated by the word mad bhakta, he fully engages in devotional service, specifically in the 9 processes of devotional engagement: hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering prayers, carrying out the orders of the Lord, making friends with Him, and surrendering everything to Him. One can engage in all 9 devotional processes, or 8 or 7, or at least in 1, and that will surely make one perfect. Right? So a devotee is always trying to engage in these activities. Right? So that will make... So we have all this analytical aspect. So the analytical aspect is just shows what tools one uses, how one situates oneself. Right? So we understand the technicalities of Sambandhavide and Prayojana. But the point is that one is just absorbed in the devotional activity. Right? So the difficulty means it's very direct when we're talking just a direct devotional activity, and if we're talking directly what is mundane. Difficulty comes is when we're discussing how to engage the mundane in the Lord's service. So to be able to distinguish that it's actually being engaged and it's not remaining mundane, or that it is engaged, it's no longer mundane. You get both problems, right? Someone thinks, just because I'm engaging in that, I'm a devotee, so anything I do is automatically devotional service. They can't distinguish what is devotional and what's not.
That's the liberal.
Yeah, it means like I'm managing the temple, I'm doing everything for the temple, you know, and all that, I'm protecting the Lord's interests, but the methods he's using aren't actually satisfying to the Lord. So technically, there may be some aspect that is devotional, but the problem is the methods he's using aren't. But he'll consider that both are there. So as he becomes purified, he may be able to appreciate, but if not, then... At the same time, is then we may take it that the activity being done for Krishna, but then on the material platform, it wouldn't be considered necessarily ideal. You know, so therefore, it's not devotional service. But you'll also get that, is that, oh, if somebody did something wrong, he can't be a devotee, right? You know, because the point is pure devotees don't do anything wrong. Yeah, generally, that's the rule, but Krura was an eternal associate of the Lord. Things went wrong. It happens. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, to take that also is that if there's anything wrong, and then one can't forgive for that, right? You know, forgiveness is the brahminical quality. Right? But that forgiveness is not sentimental mundane, it's based on the spiritual. Right? The form of Krishna is essential and supreme. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Right, so here he's even saying, because here the localized Paramatma, though Vishnu is supreme, still the manifestation that he's doing is specific for that situation. Right? Because you don't have Paramatma where you have Garbhadaksha, Vishnu, or Kiradaksha, Mahavishnu. Kiradaksha Vishnu is Brahma. Thus Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishwarupa or Vishnu, right? Because some will say he's the manifestation of the mode of goodness, or some will say he's the manifestation of Vishnu. No, he's the origin of both. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus, but for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important but the original form, two-handed Shyamasundara. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shyamasundara form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, that the purport of this 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. Right? So, having described all these things, we know that all these qualities, all these manifestations, all go back to Krishna. Because Krishna's manifested this universal form, manifested the Vishnumurti, and now he's come back to Krishna. So Arjuna has tried all of them. So only Krishna's original form. So again, we see is the whole everything about it is now that we've focused on Krishna, it should be Krishna alone. It should be exclusive. Not yes, okay, we're worshippers of Krishna, but also everything else. No, it should be exclusively Krishna. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaur Shrimati.